The zombie takeout before you is somehow special. It's better than anything you've ever tasted. What's up? Welcome to episode 164 of Zombie Takeout, the B movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we have a little bit of listener submitted. This is from John Phillips from our Facebook page in reference to last week's episode. He said, spoiler, Tina is in the crowd at the end of Sergeant Pepper's. I can't wait for the discussion on that movie. So it's just a little cameo in Sergeant Pepper, so thankfully she won't be acting.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie, and this will probably be the first time I watch it sober, so I don't know how that's going to play out.
I've never seen it, but I do distinctly remember the trailer from when I went to see New Hope in the theaters at 5, because my sister was flipping out over it.
Yeah.
She loved the Bee Gees, so. Yes, I just dated myself.
I was pretty smashed. I remember some pretty uncomfortable moments of, like, Steve Martin singing Maxwell Silverhammer.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah, we'll have to get to that soon. And Richard Hawes posted a link to the poster for Hell Baby, the latest from Reno 911 creators Robert Ben-Gurant and Thomas Lennon.
Nice.
It has a very 70s kind of, you know, what happened to Baby Jane kind of vibe, which is interesting.
I've started hearing some stuff about that movie. I'm trying to remember the guy that plays Craig from The Office. I hope I got his name right. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name, but he's the devil, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, Craig. That's
the warehouse guy.
Okay, because it's been a while since I've seen The Office. Okay, yeah. I think I've heard that he was in it.
Yeah.
Okay, on to some news. First story, actually only story this week, from IGN. Aaron Eckhart on the nature of the I, Frankenstein monster. Aaron Eckhart was recently on the Keeping It Real podcast, where he talked a bit about the film and its take on this iconic monster. He said, the film is about the figure of the monster, Frankenstein. Victor Frankenstein is in it, so it's loosely based on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Huh.
But then it's brought into contemporary times, in this fantastical world. So it's a movie about good and evil, about gargoyles and demons. And it's about a monster trying to find his soul, his place in this world. And he happens to be an expert at the Filipino martial art of Kali stick fighting at the same time.
What?
Which, for those who are unfamiliar, is done with 2.5-foot rattan sticks, or with any stick you can pick up off the street. And it's being able to dispatch soulless people with these sticks. He then went on to say, it's a guy who's sort of cursed, because the monster Frankenstein, when he was born, his father called him an abortion, an aberration. He's got no love in his life. He's unworthy. Children run and scream at the sight of him. So what's worse punishment than to roam the earth for eternity with this sort of sickness and not finding love and not finding your soul? And that's what the movie's about. So the second half of that is very similar to the book, which I highly, highly, highly recommend if you haven't
read
it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It is a masterpiece. It is the first pure science fiction story.
Definitely.
That first part, though.
What? You know, kind of lost me with the martial arts thing.
Frankenstein, and you know, Frankenstein's whole thing was that he was huge.
Yeah.
He was never, he's actually very violent in the book, come to think of it. But it's all because of his strength, not because of weapons or any particular fighting skill.
Now, is Eckhart playing the doctor?
I think he's playing the monster.
Okay. Because I thought Jackie Chan was going to be playing the monster.
Perhaps
he's talking about martial arts.
Yeah.
Jet Li.
So that's going to be a lot of fun, and probably not for the right reasons.
Chris Tucker as the doctor, Jackie Chan as the monster. Okay. There's your movie.
Yeah. Anyway, on to this week's movie. Something much, much better. And it is from 2013, Upstream Color. The latest from one of our favorites, Shane Carruth. And that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by EP Exotics, for all your exotic floral needs, and more, It's EP Exotics.
And also brought to you by Kenwood Valley Recordings, because you got to pay for the pigs somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, oh, how the hell am I going to do this one?
I've been waiting for this.
This is not fair. To do an impromptu plot summary of this movie is just all right.
Well, it's
All
actually
right,
very
man.
simple.
Okay, yeah.
If you ignore all of the subtext and, anything that really matters in the movie.
But here's the problem. I'm still not clear on the plant worm relationship.
Well, I was gonna wait for this, but I've seen it 3 times now.
I've seen it twice.
I'm reasonably sure, almost completely positive, that the actual parasite is the blue stuff.
Okay.
That's just they're just normal worms and normal orchids.
Really? And it takes the parasite. All right, so.
The worm eats or rolls around in or, somehow takes on the parasite, and then it also affects the plants.
And I'm still not sure about the kids in the beginning either. I understand a lot of this movie, trust me, but
And you went to a screening with a Q&A by Shane Carruth.
I know, and he opened up a lot of doors watching this the second time around that I did not have the first time, because he spoke after the movie. So anyway, there is a plant that has some blue stuff on it that also seems to have an awful lot of worms in the plant, whether they are there naturally or whether they're there because they are the parasite.
Well, I think any potted plant, you'd probably find a good deal of worms around it.
Okay, I'm not a gardener. Anyway, so the worms, when ingested, you are able to psychologically control the person that ingested the worm.
They're hypnotized.
Yes. And first he's trying it out on these kids, I guess. I'm really, there's no dialogue in the beginning, so don't go looking for
There's a
that.
question about the kids, but we'll get to that.
Right. So this person decides to use this to, well, to steal. He looks for victims. He finds a young woman who, is pretty successful professional, and he forces her to ingest the worm, and then he slowly just destroys her life piece by piece. It's just kind of what I said when I was uncomfortable watching the first time around, because we're like, where is this going? How bad is this going to be? I didn't sign up for like a
Okay.
Saw film when
Because
I first saw
it was
this.
uncomfortable. The scene where he initially attacks her was uncomfortable for me. But the rest wasn't because I think I knew where it was going. I think I maybe knew a bit too much about the basic plot going in. I wish I could have
Yeah.
known a bit less. But yeah, if you don't know where that's going in, that
Well,
can be very
right.
creepy.
Creepy as fucking hell if you don't know where that's going. That could have gone to a lot of places.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
still, the fact that he pretty much disassembled her life.
He basically cleaned out all of her money and kept her hostage for an unspecified amount of time.
Right. Causing her to lose her job. Pretty much causing her to lose everything. So she has this worm in her that's crawling around when he's all, done and cleaned out her account. And then she hears this noise being played across town, I guess, to an empty area where this man, only known as the Sampler, playing this sound that attracts the worm to him, where he has a pig ready. And really, the first time I saw the pig, and in fact, even the second time I saw the
Yeah.
pig, I was just, what the fuck? He takes the worm out of her and puts it in the pig, linking the two psychically. I'm just gonna let that sink in for a little bit. So she then discovers, of course, after snapping out of her whole nightmare, that her life has been taken, pretty much. That she has to start from the beginning, and and has weird feelings, of course, about, rooting through shit and
She discovers that her life has been destroyed.
No. She also has the mysterious feelings of rooting through shit and
Oh, didn't
being
pick up on
penned
that.
up, and
Okay.
that she's psychically linked
Oh, well, we know.
to the
I just
pit.
saying I never picked up on that, but okay.
Like, he's eating quinoa because the pig's eating quinoa. Anyway, I got ahead of myself. It turns out, well, it later turns out that she was not the only one that has gone through
Yes.
this. She meets a man, and he kind of has a weird story himself, but it seems like they know each other. And they talk, and the question still remains, I think, whether they were married to begin with or not.
I don't think they were married to each other. I think that was a previous marriage.
Maybe.
Because yes, it was a previous marriage because he said he part of the problem was he was busted for embezzlement.
Right.
And
He was busted for embezzlement because
because of he
the
was
worm.
t because of the thief.
Right. The thief had him embezzling from his job to get more money.
But he also mentions a substance abuse problem that actually broke up his marriage. And I had assumed that that was before the attack. Because they remember what happened before. It's just that unspecified period of time while they're hypnotized that they don't know.
But the way he said it, that he actually says the line, "I'm married to you right now."
Because the pigs had a family by that point.
Oh, that's right. Well, anyway, we're lost in this impromptu plot summary, as can be expected with this. All right, so let's try to sum this up in a nutshell really quickly here. Too late. They really go in and out of identity. It's a very fluid thing, but they start piecing together exactly what happened to them and plot revenge and hilarity and silence ensues.
Okay.
I think that's a good place to leave it.
That's a good spot to end it, yeah.
Yeah. The revenge plotting is very subtle, though. You really, of course, have no idea that they're
It's really just her.
true, but he helps.
Well, he helps, certainly. He does the driving.
Yeah.
More about that later. Now, the thief.
Yes.
Specifically the kids. There's a question of whether or not they're his apprentices or test subjects. But they are consuming the parasite, the blue stuff,
Right.
and using it to basically share a brain and kind
Yeah.
of playing with it, using it recreationally.
Yeah.
And you see him at one point while they're doing this, looking out of the house that they're in front of. So
Right.
they're on his property, they're with him. But the question is he training them or is he experimenting on them?
It's not answered, though, is it?
Well, actually, this isn't a spoiler. I can drop this now. At the very end, when he makes the discovery, one of them is with him.
Right.
So by that, I assumed that they were his apprentices.
Okay.
Because why would one of them be with him at that point if he wasn't training them?
It's tough to say.
It's indeterminate, but
Yeah.
that's how I took it. Now, part of what the thief does when he has these people hypnotized is, well, he has them go through a series of repetitive tasks to sort of keep their mind occupied and
Yeah.
keep them pliant. One of them is to copy the book Walden page by page and then turn the pages into paper chains. Now, he disposes of the paper chains when he's done with the victim, and I didn't quite understand why he did it.
He wanted as little evidence as possible behind, I'm
Okay,
guessing.
that's possible. That's a good possibility, yeah. Yeah, because when she comes back to her apartment after the worm is removed, it's basically just the damage that she did.
Well, right. It's one of the most terrible moments in the film is when, and usually when I say this, I'm usually it's a criticism of like the filmmaker, but no, it's of the character. Where she dials the nine, the one, she's about to hit the other one, and then she observes everything in the apartment that is wrong and out of place and damaged, and realizes at that moment that she's the one that has done all the damage by her own hand. And who would believe any of the story? And so she's alone.
And she has no memory of the thief.
Right.
And suddenly she comes home after this blackout to find her apartment ravaged.
She's got stab wounds in her leg, of course.
Also, during the thief scene, and later in the film, he does something beautiful. He almost literally observes Chekhov's gun.
Yes.
You see a gun when the thief is there, it gets used at the end. It's Chekhov to the letter.
Although, wasn't Chekhov's rule that you have to do it by the end of the second act?
I was researching that. He made reference to it a number of times.
I thought you had, by if you introduce a gun by the end of the first act, that it has to go off by the end of the second or third,
That's
I forget.
the most common quote, but there were a number of other quotes that I looked up in
Okay.
reference to this because I wanted to make sure it was Chekhov that I was thinking of, and
Well, it wasn't Sulu, of course.
and he changed that several times. Basically, the idea was that you need to use it by the end of the piece.
Okay.
You can't just leave it unused if you show it.
You show a gun, it does have to be used, but yeah. All right.
And also, why did she have 36 grand in coins?
I don't know. She maybe just liked coin collecting.
Yeah, it's one of those nitpicky questions that
That
I
was not one of the things that really
are
befuddled me because
irrelevant to the story at hand, but it just kind of stuck out to me.
I like coins myself. I don't know.
It just seemed odd. And completely irrelevant to the larger story, of course.
Don't think I have 36 grand worth around the house.
And a great touch shortly after the thief leaves. She's laying in bed. He starts off by telling her that there's this wall keeping hunger and fatigue at bay. And just before he leaves, he tells her the wall has fallen. So she suddenly becomes incredibly hungry and incredibly tired. So she eats everything in her fridge and passes out. And you see her lying in bed, and as she's just starting to wake up, sort of, she's still hypnotized, she still has the worm in her, but as she's starting to become conscious effectively, she does these hand motions that you saw the kids doing earlier in the film.
That's right.
Which was a beautiful touch.
Man.
And then you see the worm crawling under her skin.
A cheap effect, but oh, so beautifully done.
Beautifully done, but I have to nitpick it. Okay, she ingests the worm that's in her stomach. How does it get out without causing tremendous pain?
Is it in the stomach or is it in the blood?
Well, but it's a worm. I don't think it can travel through the veins. It's too big, especially by the point it's taken out.
Yeah, that's a big ass worm.
So that I have to nitpick a little bit because it would have had to burrow through her stomach, into at one point her uterus. She finds out later in the film she can't have children because it looks like she had cancer surgery, and it's just from the worm burrowing through. And then, in the scene I just mentioned, you see it under her skin. How did it do this without causing tremendous pain? Then again, she was hypnotized. Maybe that's why it didn't hurt. Maybe it was an effect of the parasite.
Actually, I was just looking online at somebody. Somebody was also theorizing that she may have had a kid before the events of the film. That there's a picture of her playing with a child on like her nightstand.
But she mentions nieces and nephews after she finds out she can't have kids.
Oh yeah, very true, very
She
true.
says, and I don't understand the line, but she says, I'll never see my nieces and nephews again, or something along those lines. There were a lot of lines that I didn't quite understand, but I'm guessing those will make sense with future viewings.
Yes.
After Primer, I'm perfectly willing to give Shane Carruth the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Yeah. It's in there. Don't question it.
And there are certain, little questions I have about, the logic. They're so irrelevant to the plot. I'm bringing them up, but I'm not really holding them against the movie.
You'll figure it out by like the third, fourth, or fifth viewing, you know?
And this is why I love Shane Carruth, and I think Panos Cosmatos, who did Beyond the Black Rainbow, falls into this category as well. He gives you homework.
Yes.
And not just in that you have to see the movies multiple times to really understand them. They demand that you think about them while you're not watching them.
Right.
And one of the things that bugged me initially was how would an organism like this evolve? Being, the science guy. And it actually came up with a theory of how the parasite would evolve to feed on consciousness.
Oh, fuck. All right.
Funny. Okay, you want me to get into
I'll bite, yeah.
it? Okay, so the parasite is eaten by worms because it's, small and they can eat it.
Yeah.
Now, some mutation happened to the parasite that allowed it to feed off of consciousness. And let's just say the worm was probably eaten by a caveman.
Huh.
And it got into him. And maybe several worms that were infected with the parasite were eaten by his family, and it allowed them to share thoughts.
And then he invent wheel.
Well, perhaps he invent wheel, but also this would be something that he would want to share.
Yeah.
And I get the impression that something that feeds part of the organism feeds the organism as a whole.
Okay. Now.
So this ability to feed off of consciousness, off of thoughts, would help the whole of the organism. So, even only if only a few were eaten by early man, it would benefit the organism as a whole, which
Right,
would help it
now,
evolve.
I get when the worm is in the person that it controls, their consciousness, that they're hypnotized through the worm. Then I get the psychic connection between the pig and the worm.
Okay.
How do they still exert psychic control, though?
Well, it's not control, it's just they feel what each other is feeling.
How does the sampler, how is he able to look and spy upon their lives
That's a question. And I had the same thought.
without the worm in them still?
Well, the worm is irrelevant. The worm is just transportation.
You're right. And the more I think about that, yeah, the parasite
Is the blue
itself
stuff.
has to be the blue stuff because when the worm is taken out, they're still under the control
Yeah.
and they
So
still have the link.
the worm is irrelevant.
Yeah.
The question is, does the sampler have the blue stuff in him?
Ooh,
Which is possible.
very possible.
But he is able to see the sample, the victims.
And why go after the sampler rather than the thief?
Well, we'll get to that at the end, and that raises an interesting question, but later.
Yeah.
The sampler is able to pull this, what looks like a Jedi mind trick on the pigs
Yeah.
and observe the sampled. And you find out later that Chris develops this ability as well without benefit of a pig. So maybe he has a high enough dose of the parasite in him to do this.
Okay.
That's the only logical way I can come up with. I can think that it would be done.
And is it just the sampler? It's just such a creepy motherfucker that it's easy to see revenge exacted upon him rather than the thief, who's just kind of like a,
Well,
I don't know.
before we get into that question, because that deals with the end of the movie, I don't want to get too far ahead.
Sure.
But I do want to talk about the sampler, specifically the actor, Andrew Sencenik. He had lines in one scene. Aside from that, it is a completely silent performance, and it was brilliant.
Creepy as fucking hell.
Well, at points he's creepy as hell.
Yeah.
At points he's very kindly during the surgery scene.
Oh, I think he was creepy there too, to tell you
Really?
the truth. Oh,
And
yeah.
see,
Creepy from the beginning to end.
not for me. He was very kindly in the surgery scene, and then
You can't pull a worm out about the
the action
crank.
was creepy.
Be creepy.
But the character itself, he was very gentle with the pig and with her. And when he's observing the sampled, he seems to really care about them.
Well, then he loses patience with them because they damage his fence, and then he
Well, then,
just.
not the pigs. When he's earlier, when he's watching the sampled, when you see him, behind the woman who's window shopping, or in the car with the one guy, or
Yeah.
particularly outside of the hospital room. One of the sampled's wife was injured somehow, it's unspecified.
Yeah.
I suspect possibly a suicide attempt. And you see her husband, who had been sampled, sitting in her hospital bed, and the sampler psychically is sitting outside of the room, and he seems legitimately concerned. I get the impression that he really cared about these people.
But then what he did to the pigs?
Well, okay.
You can't be that kindly and then stuff pigs, baby pigs, in a sack and throw them into the river.
Screw going in order. So I was trying to keep some semblance of order here, but screw
Time isn't holding up. Time isn't
it.
after us.
Okay. It seemed like that was the first case of one of the pigs getting pregnant.
Yes.
It had never happened before because he needed a veterinarian to tell him about it. And because of the pregnancy, the male, the father, was getting aggressive. He was
Okay.
protecting his mate and his future children.
Right.
And there was a risk of him getting out. And I think that, I won't say it had to be done, but that was a measure to keep them passive, to keep control over them. If you remove the young from the situation, you assert control again.
Ah, but of course.
I'm not saying it was right, but
Well, the one part of the variable, the one variable that he missed is when you fuck with the young, you might pacify the father, but that mother is going to come after you.
do we just want to jump to the end?
And that is, well,
Yeah,
no.
let's take this completely out of order because that sets up a transition.
All right.
Shankaruth has said that they feed on consciousness.
Yes.
I would say more accurately that they feed on negative emotions.
Good point.
And in killing the young pigs, the sampler inadvertently strengthened the parasite to the point where, it turned the orchids completely blue,
Yeah.
and Chris was able to see upstream, which is where the
Ah.
title comes from. Because, she observed the observer,
Right.
which allowed them to track him and kill him. And about that scene, it kind of struck me as odd the first time that you see Jeff eating in the office building,
Right.
when you later find out they were in the process of driving to find him, to find the sampler and kill him.
It's so crazy because did they kill him in the office or at the farm?
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
So to quote Admiral Ackbar.
I know.
Because earlier you see the sampler seeing the memories of the guy whose wife was injured.
Right.
He got into his head beyond just where he was physically.
Yeah.
I think Jeff had put himself in his own mind in the office building eating as a trap
All
for the
right.
sampler to keep him distracted while they drove to the farm.
All right.
Because he clearly, he's, when you see him dead, he's, and we're spoiling it, I know, but
No, we're not. We could explain every inch of this movie, and you still would probably have to watch it at least two times to get it all.
You can't spoil a Shankaruth movie.
No, you can't. It's impossible.
But when you see him dead, he is at the farm. And she's walking back with the files.
Okay.
So I think the office was in Jeff's head, and it was the trap set up for the sampler so he didn't notice them coming to get him. But this sets up an interesting moral question.
Right.
Now, assuming that the sampler and the thief were not working together.
Which I've read that they're not.
Okay. There's no evidence that they are.
No, there isn't.
The sampler and the thief are effectively both parasites
Yeah.
off of the benefit of the parasite itself. What did he do wrong?
Right. That's exactly what I was getting at. Why exact revenge on the sampler and not the thief?
Because it plays as a morality play.
Yeah.
He's been shown as the villain for most of the movie.
Right.
And so, and they kill him, and everything is happy. But he killed some piglets. Wrong, but not worth dying over.
Which is really, I think, what got him in the end.
Well, but only because to Chris, it seemed like he was killing her children. She was convinced he was
Exactly.
killing her children, when in reality, he just killed some pigs.
Because she exclaims, where are they? I've got to find them. And of course, Jeff's like, "Who? What are you talking about?" But then I think he suddenly figures out what she's talking about because they feel it.
Yeah, he feels it on a lower level because she's the mother.
Yeah.
Or she's connected to the mother.
Right.
And it's also that ending is also what gave me the idea that it feeds on negative emotions. Because after they kill the sampler, they send word to all of the other sampled about what they had been through and send them a copy of Walden, which I don't know how they afforded that. Where those came from. But, you know, then they all come to the farm and it seems like they take over the farm and they clean it up and they take, you know, great care of the pigs and everybody's happy. And the parasite either mutates or dies. I couldn't tell. It turns red and becomes useless to the thief.
That's true. You know, I was kind of trying to figure out what happened at the end because I did see him kind of, you know, shaking his head and it was a different color.
Yeah, the flower had turned red instead of blue.
Yeah.
And he looks at it and kind of puts it aside, showing that it's useless to him now.
Yeah.
So the parasite was either mutated or killed by all of this happiness that they had brought to the pigs and to their own lives by taking care of each other. And it's effectively a happy ending.
Yeah.
And it's basically a Love Conquers All story, if you really look at it.
Is it really, though?
Well, if those two pigs hadn't gotten together, they wouldn't have had the offspring that allowed Chris to end the sampler and
And
break out
wow,
of their routine.
how many times can you recall using the phrase when those two pigs got together and it's a positive statement?
It's a Shane Carruth movie.
Okay, just checking.
But that is the key element that leads to the happy ending, is those two pigs getting together, and then jointly, Chris and Jeff.
See, what got me this time, the second time around, was what Shane Carruth had said at the Q&A about what the central, you know, element of the movie is about identity. And, you know, he needed something to take, you know, completely disassemble someone's identity, you know, to take it away entirely. And it's just so weird how fluid your identity really could be. You know, if you were to lose everything and then you just become, you know, a zombie, you know, watching, you know, a painting on the wall and laughing at it or just staring at the photocopier.
And then later on, you get that when they don't know whose memories are whose.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing about, you know, when you're a couple and just, you know, the memories become jumbled and confused.
And you get the first sense of that when they're playing the game on the train about, you know, telling stories about the other passengers, making up stories.
Probably the best, you know, the best you'll ever get for a relationship montage.
And then she turns it around on him and says he's divorced, and you know she cheated, and she's trying to ferret out why his marriage, Jeff's marriage ended, and she happens upon the substance abuse problem.
I still think the substance abuse could actually be the parasite.
No, because I th we showed with they showed with Chris that that happens immediately and your life is ruined. You know, the substance abuse was either before or after that, and it was a regular drug problem.
I thought he, see, because he didn't really tell about the worm or anything before that.
Well, no, he mentioned that he had embezzled a large sum of money.
Right. He said that,
And you're left to assume that that was the thief.
yeah. You know, the substance abuse really could just been a more explainable way of, I went fucking crazy for like a couple weeks and did whatever this dude told me to do, and you know, that was it.
Possibly.
'Cause how would you explain something like this where, yeah, I just, you know, signed everything over to this guy for a couple weeks and you know, just drove him around and drank water for like a week.
Further proof that the blue stuff is the parasite. You see a blue streak on the side of the glass.
Oh, yeah.
And in reference to the relationship montage, I loved the scene where at the very beginning when they first start talking, she pulls out the pill bottles and basically says, "Here's my baggage. I've just saved us, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of going down this path."
And where are the pill bottles from, you
Well, they
know?
didn't specify
Right.
some kind of condition she had.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's one of those questions that is completely irrelevant to the
Yeah,
point
it is.
that it can be whatever you want it to be.
That is the tough part. That's why you have to watch a Shane Carruth movie more than once because there are details in there that you're thinking, okay, what's that mean? And it really has no bearing on the actual plot.
And for me, there were some things that, again, bothered me the first or second time that the third time made sense, like Jeff eating in the office or the Starlings line, because he repeats it three times. And this time I noticed that she starts it the first time, he starts it the second time. So they're trading places. The third time I think was a little unnecessary. But the first two times it made a point of they're switching places.
It's weird. Switching places or, just
Trading or not even
kind
trading
of
identities, but they kind of have a shared identity.
they're right, exactly. They're kind of melding,
Which is,
which
again, gives credence to the idea that it's basically a love story.
yeah.
It's a love conquers all story because the relationship got them out of this hell that the thief and the parasite had put them in, and the sampler to a lesser extent.
And they become farmers.
Now, I did have some issues with the film.
What's that?
And this is with a couple of little minor nitpicky things. When the pigs are being ta piglets that are being taken away, the parents are sequestered
Yeah.
so he can get to the young. And this causes Jeff and Chris to basically have violent outbursts.
Yes.
Jeff gets into this fight in the office, which could have been better choreographed. You only see one little takedown, but it looked a little iffy. I guess it was low budget. They couldn't really afford a stunt coordinator.
Yeah, you really don't see any of it at all. I mean, he knocks the paper over and then he just kind of charges
Yeah,
into.
clotheslines one dude.
Yeah.
And then Chris punches out a pane of glass.
Yeah.
The punch looked way over rehearsed.
Oh, I think I see. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Looked way too practiced, and it didn't need to be shown three times.
Wasn't exactly a violent rah. It
Looked
was
like a
kind of
very
a, like,
careful.
I'm going to take this window out and not really hurt my hands on
Yeah.
the glass.
It looked like a very careful, targeted punch as opposed to just striking out in rage, which is what she was doing.
Yeah.
I can chalk that up to the budget. They couldn't really afford a stunt coordinator and stunt people. Incidentally, I could not find the budget for this, but I've heard that it is considerably larger than Primer, but not
Wow, come on.
anywhere near, a mainstream film. The only real issue I had was Shane Carruth's performance.
I remember you saying this last week and was kind of surprised to hear it. But yeah, seeing it the second time around, no, I gotta disagree. He
Really?
reminds me of a young Clint Eastwood.
Well, Eastwood was never known for his acting.
Yeah, he's had his de he's
He's
definitely
been in
had
some
his
great films, and
performances.
he's a great director, but he was never known as a great actor.
He's definitely had his performances, at least from the 70s and even into the 80s.
Perhaps. But Shane's not bad. But he just doesn't quite have the range that the role requires, in my opinion.
I don't know. I mean, you're kind of washed out from the parasite in itself.
Possibly. Okay.
I think they're both very catatonic, but
But I believed it from Chris.
she's fucking amazing. There's just no other way of putting it. This is just a fantastic performance.
Amy Siemens was the standout.
Holy shit.
As
What
good
do I
as
even
I think
say?
Senseneig was. He was the second for me. The second best performance, but Amy Siemens was amazing.
He didn't have, a whole lot to work with.
But I love that you saw a lot, at least I noticed a lot of range in a completely silent role.
Very true.
But yeah, Amy Siemens was brilliant. And I liked the calmness of the thief's voice. I mean, it's a small role, he doesn't really do much.
Yeah.
But he has this great calmness to his voice, which is completely unexpected. You expect a criminal to be more aggressive.
Well, right. Well, it's a very non-confrontational way of doing it too. The whole my, head, my face is made out of the same material of the sun, so you
Which
cannot
was
look
a
directly at me.
brilliant play, because that made you kept her from looking at him.
Right.
Very clever. Oh, also another budget thing that I noticed, it had to be a budget issue. The office that Jeff worked at looked like it was still being built. Or not built, but finished off, And I
Well,
think it was probably just that's the building they could get the film in.
yeah, it was something with his job and what he was doing there. Yeah, because remember, he's off the books.
But no, I mean the building itself. Certain rooms looked like they were still being painted and finished off.
Oh yeah, very much so. I mean, the office was just an empty room.
So I'm guessing it was just the budget issue, and that's the building they could get,
Yeah.
and which is not something I can hold against it.
Didn't really need much in the office anyway, you know? And I kind of liked the open space feel to it. It's just so weird to be in something like that's so abandoned, you know? It gave them room to work with. What about the sound?
Which sound?
All of it. I mean,
The score, you mean?
Carruth did the score and the sound. Well, the sound is a huge
Oh yeah.
deal in it. I mean, the sampler.
The sampler, that's what he does. He records sounds.
Right.
And he sells CDs of presumably sound effects or electronic music of some sort.
I think if this doesn't get at least an Oscar nomination for sound, if not the Oscar itself, they should just stop giving Oscars.
It deserves it. But considering it was in limited release for a month and then went to home video, it is anything but what the Academy even looks at.
So they can go fuck themselves.
I absolutely agree that it deserves it, but I don't think he has a chance. I'd love to be wrong about that.
You know, if someone does comes out with a movie that has some Spice Girl special effects, you know, some great stop action motion.
And I also love the score. You know,
Yeah.
Shankar's music is very unusual, but it fits the movies perfectly.
It's creepy as hell as well.
And there's this piece at the end when they're after the sampler is killed, when they're bringing back the papers and kind of, you know, sending Walden and all the information out to the other sampled.
Yeah.
That starts off with this low bass note that's really startling and kind of tense.
Yeah.
And then he brings this very pretty melody right over top of it. I love the piece, and it has been stuck in my head since 8 days ago when I first saw the movie.
Oh boy.
Oh, I almost forgot. I have to give a shout out to Trailer Clash because that's where I first heard about this movie.
Oh wow.
They reviewed the teaser trailer back in December, and that's actually part of what got me to see Primer. I'd been hearing about Primer for years, and then they mentioned that here's the new movie from the guy who did Primer, and it looked really interesting. So it eventually led me to finally seeing Primer, which I'd noticed on Netflix for a while and kept putting off. And then I think it was in February, very shortly before we reviewed Primer, they reviewed the full trailer, and that was the point where I said I need to see this fucking movie because I understood the importance of a new Shane Carruth movie at that point.
Yeah. We're very lucky that we have come this late in the game to Shane Carruth, considering how long it was between Primer and this film.
Yeah, I don't know if it's late in the game considering it's his second movie.
Well, I know, but think of how many years people that saw Primer when it was first out had to wait
Yeah. Oh,
between
yeah.
films.
Sense. Yeah.
I would have gone nuts.
He will soon be working on his third movie, A Modern Ocean. They're going to start shooting this summer.
Is he
So,
not doing Topiary?
well, the deal with the topiary. Okay, for those who don't know, his second movie was supposed to be one called A Topiary.
Yeah.
And actually, the footage you see Chris editing in Upstream.
That's how I heard about it. It was at the Q&A. Someone said, I saw you using footage from
Yeah,
Topiary.
that's from A Topiary. There were funding issues.
I need to see that movie.
So do I.
Who could not think that, seeing those clips in the movie?
And it's been effectively shelved indefinitely. He
Oh.
kept, you know, trying to keep up hope. And there was a website in place to get the financing. And then finally, in early 2013, he told EW that it's the thing I basically wasted my whole life on.
Ah. Oh.
So I have a distinct feeling that it's never going to happen, unfortunately.
Can't Lucas give him like some of that Disney money that he made and just, you know,
Yeah,
let him
probably.
go on it? 'Cause what's Lucas gonna do with that money anyway?
Yeah. And for the uninitiated, a topiary is about a bunch of kids who build a monster.
And Holy shit. I don't I I've only saw what? You maybe see like 5 seconds of it in the film?
You see one shot, basically.
Yeah. I have to see that movie.
Yeah.
I have to. That movie has to be made.
And basically all you see in the movie is a wooden crate, small wooden crate, on these legs that are walking.
Yes. Who the fuck would want to see that?
Yeah.
Anyway. Do you have any notes left?
Well, okay, now there were some interesting cameos, I will say.
Okay.
At one point you see, his mother and daughter gathering the orchids.
Right.
The mother is played by Kathy Carruth, Shane's mother.
Nice.
And him and Karen Carruth, and I'm not sure if that's his sister or his wife, did the craft services. And in a Primer connection, Casey Gooden, who played Robert in Primer, was one of the producers and the camera operator on the film.
Okay, well, you can imagine Primer is probably, a friend and family sort of
Well,
deal.
Primer definitely was, and this one clearly
Yeah.
is too. I mean, his father played Granger in Primer.
Okay.
So, he does work with family because they're cheap, I'm guessing. $7,000. And maybe this was $20,000. So I'm done with my notes. Onto, well, sequels and remakes kind of pointless. Because there is no room for a sequel. It would be just them taking care of the pigs. Maybe tracking down the thief, but that's,
Upstream Color 2, Life on the Farm.
I mean, if you could team Aaron and the thief up, that could be interesting.
Oh my God, Aaron versus the thief.
Or
But
have them go against each other.
which Aaron?
Well, the one that built the big box, I'm guessing. But enough fantasizing about Primer sequels.
And they ride a topiary thing
And I know
with
nothing about modern
lances.
ocean. And actually, that's the interesting thing. Just a massive tangent here. It's interesting that his movie titles mean nothing until you see the movie.
Yeah.
Primer meant nothing until you see Primer and realize that the narrator is giving original Aaron a primer on time travel.
Which is why I think it should have been called Primer, but never mind.
Roberto Trailer Clash pronounces it that way.
Everyone else is calling it Primer. Shane Carruth called it Primer, so
Nope, it's
now,
Primer.
yeah, it's Primer.
This one, Upstream Color, the parasite is a blue substance,
Yeah.
and Chris goes upstream to find the sampler. So, a topiary, their kids building a monster, and a topiary is, a shrub that is sculpted.
A shrubbery.
So they're sculpting this thing into a monster. So a modern ocean means nothing to me now, but I'm really curious to find out what it's going to mean.
Of course.
Okay, so on to brains.
On the brain, this is a very suspenseful moment. What are we giving this movie?
It's not that suspenseful. I don't think. I had some issues, but I honestly think that those few little issues, the stunts and Shane Carruth's acting, are things that are going to become endearing the more I see it. They're just kind of become interesting flaws that make it even better. So I'm going to go five.
Yeah, I after seeing it the first time, I was kind of like, oh, it's not as good as Primer, probably, but seeing it the second time, my mind was just blown. Just seeing all the little things and making connections, like seeing him throwing out the paper chain at the very beginning
Right.
before anything had happened. Yeah, the first time I saw that, I didn't think anything about throwing out paper chains. But then when you see it the second time, it's he's throwing out the fucking paper chains.
Yeah.
You know exactly what it means. And just the whole flow of identity and just how a lot of us live our lives just going through autopilot, where we make these decisions, we have no idea what the result's going to be and what they're going to mean later on. And just to see it all happen in the span of about an hour and a half, where they just go from a young professional to a farmer, a killer farmer too, to
Yeah.
be which they somehow get away with. Yeah, five brains, without a doubt. And I can't wait to see this again. I think I like this just as much as Primer.
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, before it came out, I was kind of debating if I wanted to rent it or buy it. And then the Sunday before it was released, I said, fuck it, I'm just going to buy it. I do not regret that decision at all.
I wish I had just bought it instead of renting it.
And also, in reference to comparing it to Primer, as I mentioned to you before the show, I double featured them this weekend.
Yeah.
Watch Primer and Upstream. And I also listened back to our Primer review.
Oh, wow. You really researched this one.
Yeah, I did a lot of work on this one. I didn't like Primer that much at first. I compared it to Beyond the Black Rainbow in that
Yeah.
I respected it greatly but didn't particularly enjoy it. Now I love Primer. I'm going to say it's currently my favorite movie. This one, I think I liked it more than I liked Primer initially, and it's only grown on me, and I think this is going to become my favorite movie in a couple more viewings. I think it's right on the edge now.
And I don't think people get what the excitement is over it because they're very, understated movies. The excitement isn't, in the explosions and special effects because they're not there. The excitement is trying to figure out the mystery.
Yeah, it's the homework is the excitement.
And the mystery isn't even like who done it or whatever. No, it's
It's
just
what the fuck happened.
piecing it all together, and it's just God, when is his next movie due out?
Hopefully soon. Like I said, they're shooting it this summer, so hopefully it won't be another 6, 7 years.
Yeah, because I cannot wait that long. Pronto. Chop chop.
Ha. All right, so what have we learned?
God damn. Oh, I'm still gonna eat bacon. Who the fuck am I kidding?
I learned that they could be starlings.
But I will be more careful when next time I have tequila.
We really could have gone with a tequila reference in the title.
I know we could have.
That completely went past both of us. I don't know how that happened.
I couldn't think of one. I tried. So I saved it for what I learned.
All right, so until next week when we will be reviewing Raising Arizona,
Holy shit.
that's going to be an interesting transition from intense Shane Carruth art film to probably the most slapstick of the Coen Brothers movies.
Good God, I forgot we were doing Raising Arizona. Oh my God.
Great film, but it's just kind of one extreme to the other.
This is, I can't think of a better way of us celebrating our 4 years.
Well, this is our 4 year. I forgot to mention, this is our 4 year anniversary show.
Yes.
But thankfully, it didn't fall during the Mad Max trilogy. We got through
No,
that. We got to a great film.
neither of us stormed off after doing Beyond Thunderdome.
Yeah.
Fuck this. This ain't worth this shit, man.
If we're still doing this after Showgirls and Crossroads, I don't think Thunderdome is gonna stop us.
Two co-hosts enter, one leaves.
Yeah. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review up through Wrong. It's in order. The movie is called Wrong. Same guy who did Rubber. Looking forward to that one.
The John McLaughlin story. Wrong.
Everything after that is just in the order it was put on the list. Legend is the placeholder for now. I have a feeling Sergeant Pepper's is probably going to be very close to Wrong. I think we're going to want to get to that soon.
Yeah, we will. We should.
You'll also find the request form if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review. Leave it on the request form and the recommendations list. Was there any doubt this was going to end up there? It's Shane
Of
Carruth.
course. Yeah.
You can also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged,
You can go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. So until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
go.
you are.
That's a gift for us.
It's just. Vroom.
I'd rather avoid things I don't know how to spell.
I was just Vroom.
In
Just taking the sound that he would use to draw her out.
oh,
Vroom.
the worm sound, yeah. Well, that was more of a low rumble.
It was just like a vroom, vroom. That's good. I think that's our outtake right there, isn't it? Describing the sound.
That's a good possibility.